this is a world apart from where we were the end of July. And I think that's significant.
A U.S. Senate committee takes up healthcare reform. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, September 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, retracing the steps of an ecologist who studied Glacier Bay 100 years ago.
On paper, it looks pretty easy, and then when you get out there, it turns out to be very, very, very difficult.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside of Alaska, and it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
A U.S. Senate committee met today to figure out what to do about health care. The hearing was public and bipartisan. That's the process Senator Lisa Murkowski was calling for when she cast a key vote against the repeal and replace plan Republican leaders drafted behind closed doors. But time is short. The Senate has only a few days to stabilize the individual market across the country before insurance companies finalize their rates. And senators think Alaska has pioneered one tool that can help. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
The Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions will please come to order. This morning we're holding our first.
The session was in one of the Senate's largest hearing rooms. Some in the audience wore lab coats and scrubs, others came in wheelchairs. At least two people had paper face masks, the kind vulnerable patients wear to avoid infection. Committee Chairman Lamar Alexander urged senators to focus on small fixes to the Affordable Care Act to add stability to the individual market, where 6% of Americans buy their coverage. Alexander says senators need to be quick because at the end of the month, insurance companies submit their final rates for 2018.
We ought to be able to take this small, limited, bipartisan step on health insurance. If we don't, millions of Americans will be hurt.
Alexander is singing Murkowski's tune. She's a big fan of using the committee process to craft bills about health care and everything else. It's become a rarity in recent years. Big bills are often negotiated among the leaders of the majority party and then opposed by nearly every member across the aisle. And Murkowski agrees Congress should fix flaws in the Affordable Care Act now to bring down insurance costs.
But the interest in doing it in a bipartisan, open process way. This is a world apart from where we were the end of July. And I think that's significant.
One of the witnesses at the hearing was Alaska Insurance Division Director Lori Wing Heyer. Earlier this year, she accomplished a massive administrative feat. She got a waiver of the Affordable Care Act rules to fund a reinsurance program. Reinsurance pays for the treatment of several high-cost medical conditions. That brings down premiums for people who buy on the individual market, and that allows the government to pay less in premium subsidies. Primera, the only insurer in Alaska's individual market, credits the reinsurance program for its decision to lower premiums 20%. Again and again, senators asked Wing Heyer how other states can replicate the Alaska success. She says she's already submitted a list of suggested rule changes.
The waiver process is somewhat onerous in the fact that there is not a defined application to submit.
Wing Heyer says states essentially have to guess what data are required, and then there's a 6-month waiting period for approval. The senators took note. Improving the waiver process is on Chairman Alexander's to-do list. When the hearing ended, healthcare advocates in the audience went forward to talk to Murkowski. They thanked her for being one of three Republicans to vote against repealing the Affordable Care Act in July. An Arkansas college student named Katie McFarland lifted her shirt to her navel to show Murkowski the feeding tube she depends on.
Without the ACA, I would literally starve to death. So I just wanted to thank you.
The committee plans three more hearings this month, all focused on lowering premiums in the individual market. Meanwhile, some Senate Republicans are still hoping to repeal the Affordable Care Act with a new bill known as Graham-Cassidy. The deadline for passing that with a simple majority is also at the end of the month. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The fact that individual health insurance costs in Alaska will drop more than a fifth next year has drawn national attention, but it's not yet clear how many Alaskans will actually sign up for the insurance. Governor Bill Walker has joined a bipartisan group of governors asking Congress for more outreach to attract healthier people to the individual market. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on the effort.
Governor Walker says he decided to join seven other governors from both parties in a letter asking for changes to federal health care law, because what happens at the federal level will affect Alaska.
The governors are very involved in what happens, because sometimes those costs get shipped onto states, and so we should have a say in this process.
The August 30th letter to the Republican and Democratic leaders of the House and Senate recommended a series of steps to increase participation by both insurers and consumers, as well as to reduce costs. The same day the governors released the letter, President Trump's administration announced it would cut outreach for the individual and family market by 90%.
Well, I think that would be pretty devastating for Alaska, given the number of languages spoken in Alaska. But we need to have the ability to have the outreach effective and not cut off.
Walker says federal outreach funding has been particularly important in reaching Alaska Native language speakers. For instance, the feds prepared an advertisement in Yupik last year. The number of Alaskans who signed up for individual insurance fell last year. That may be the result of Moda Insurance dropping out of the Alaska market, which led to former Moda customers paying more. This year, one thing that could attract more customers is the 22% drop in individual insurance premiums. One factor in the price cut is the Alaska Reinsurance Program. That program combines state and federal funding to cover the costs of patients with some of the most expensive to treat conditions. The bipartisan governor's letter recommended the federal government increase funding for reinsurance and make it easier for other states to have programs like Alaska's. Walker says other states could soon be in a similar position to Alaska as more insurers leave the marketplace.
They are looking to Alaska partly because we have the highest cost of health care in the nation. We had to do something perhaps before anybody else did, just because of what was happening up here as we were losing carriers.
Heather Howard is an expert in state health insurance with Princeton University. She says support for reinsurance from the bipartisan governors draws from Alaska's experience.
It ends just before the holidays. So at a time when people are pretty busy and have a lot on their plate, there's a concern that people will miss the opportunity to sign up. The sicker people are likely to sign up because they want and need insurance, whereas the younger and healthier people may not.
People will have half as much time as last year to get individual and family coverage after the enrollment period begins on November 1st. The Trump administration moved up the deadline from January 31st to December 15th. Howard says it's important to reach those who aren't aware of the shorter time frame.
That's really a validation of the Alaska model, of what Alaska did last year by starting a reinsurance program, which has stabilized and actually reduced insurance premiums for the residents of Alaska.
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska is the only remaining insurer in the individual market. Primera spokeswoman Melanie Kuhn says most of the company's communication in the state this fall will be in the form of letters and emails to customers. The company also is encouraging insurance brokers and providers to reach out to customers prior to and during the enrollment period. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Police officers in Anchorage are seizing more heroin than almost any other drug. During a presentation to the Assembly's Public Safety Committee today, Anchorage Police Department officials shared figures on confiscations of illegal substances. In just 6 months, officers intercepted 870 grams of heroin, the equivalent of roughly 9,000 individual doses. Most of that came from street-level enforcement by the Community Action Policing Team. Separately, the department's vice unit, which focuses on larger drug cases, seized 2 kilos worth of opium, which they say equates to about 20,000 doses for opioid users. The only drug confiscated at a higher volume between March and August in the municipality was marijuana being sold outside the state's regulated legal market. Officers also seized more than 300 grams of methamphetamine, which remains a significant problem in Anchorage. APD Chief Justin Dahl told the Assembly that policing drug offenses remains one of the department's best strategies for investigating more serious property and violent crimes. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a project to offer free online access to old Alaska newspapers.
That was published by a Telegraph worker. He published only for a year, but that is actually our first newspaper.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting.
And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Since 1978, the Alaska Public Radio Network has brought Alaskan news to more than 250 communities statewide. APRN, the voices of Alaska.
A North Korean nuclear bomb test was detected in Alaska. State seismologist Michael West says Alaska Earthquake Information Center seismometers clearly registered the underground blast on Saturday.
An explosion of magnitude 6.3 is something that can be viewed or recorded really all around the globe.
West says the center seismometers, which regularly detect earthquakes, also picked up other disturbances like landslides and detonations at mines. He says signals from explosions like the underground North Korean nuke test are completely different from those of an earthquake.
During an earthquake, the earth shears in very complicated ways, and that creates a whole mix of very different looking seismic waves that propagate out in all different directions. An explosion is actually a much, much simpler source. It has one very simple motion. Everything is outward from the source.
West notes that the nuke test, although significant at magnitude 6.3, was not strong enough to affect the balance of tectonic plates. Work is wrapping up on a project to rebuild the northernmost stretch of the Dalton Highway that was badly damaged 2.5 years ago by flooding from the overflowing Sag River. Once that and two other road improvement projects on that part of the Dalton are all complete, the state plans to pave the 52-mile stretch of the road. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The contractor hired to reconstruct the 17-mile stretch of the Dalton Highway south of Dead Horse raised the level of the roadway by nearly 5 feet in some areas damaged by flooding in the spring of 2015 by the Savannah-Nicktoak River, also called the Sag River.
What happened was the Sag River overflowed its banks after several days worth of icing. There were some very quick warming temperatures and some flooding that shut down the roadway.
State Department of Transportation construction manager Mike Lund says the project contractor, Anchorage-based Bryce Incorporated, hauled in some 2.4 million tons of gravel to build up that stretch of the Dalton. That's enough to fill some 120,000 side dumper trucks. It's one of three projects worth a total of $109 million that are underway on the Dalton from Pump Station 2 to Dead Horse.
Eventually, over the next few years, we intend to actually pave this roadway.
Lund says paving the last 52 miles of the Dalton would save the state millions of dollars that it regularly pays to resurface the roadway that's pounded by some 200 semi-tractor trailer rigs headed to or from Prudhoe every day.
The biggest thing that these projects do over the short and long term is reduce maintenance and operations costs.
Lund says the federal government pays for 91% of the cost of road projects like this, and he says the state tries to take advantage of that by including measures that will cut future road maintenance costs. He says the gravel added to the roadbed will help insulate the permafrost on which the highway was built. The project also calls for a 4-inch layer of insulation to be buried at or near grade to further protect the permafrost from thawing. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Some of Alaska's oldest newspapers are being digitized and posted online as part of a national project to provide free public access to historic periodicals. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
Deep in the state library archives and museum are walk-in coolers loaded with racks of microfilm. Project director Anastasia Tarman says the materials are preserved at a constant 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
This is our holding area, so these are for the project. In here are all of the newspaper masters.
Alaska's earliest known newspaper was printed around the same time the territory was being sold by Russia to the U.S. It was a hand-bound English-language sheet put together by a Western Union expedition at Port Clarence on the Seward Peninsula.
It's called the Eskimo. It's spelled in a funny way with a U-X at the end. That was published by a telegraph worker. He published only for a year, but that is actually our first newspaper. It's online already.
But soon, newspapers sprang up alongside the territory's mines, lumber mills, and ports. And those are the papers the state archives have been saving to microfilm since the early 1990s. The problem is that microfilm is fragile, and it can only be viewed at the state archives in Juneau or mailed out by interlibrary loan. Now they're finally able to go digital. In 2016, the State Archives received a $275,000 grant from the National Endowment of the Humanities to participate in the National Digital Newspaper Program. Archivist Leah Geibel is part of a small team digitizing the microfilms, scanning them from a reel-to-reel into a computer.
And then I go through and process it, and that's what gives me the individual images.
These individual images are the pages from century-old newspapers. A 1912 front page from the Alaska Daily Empire, the forerunner to the Juneau Empire, is a mix of wire dispatches from the Balkan Wars to a list of ships in port. But as they're in digital form, names and places can now be searched for by keyword from anywhere with internet access. Leah Geibel has spent the better part of this year with these old newspapers, and you know what? The themes are familiar.
People are concerned about conservation. People are concerned about developing the resources, and I think that's something that has been one of the major issues throughout Alaskan history.
In August, the first batch, about 100,000 pages from three newspapers, were sent to the Library of Congress and posted on the Chronicling America website. Over the next year, 10,000 pages will be added each month. The hard part was deciding which would be digitized first.
There are so many newspapers across the state, so many great pioneer newspapers.
That's Juneau Empire reporter James Brooks. He served on an 11-member panel of academics, historians, and journalists to decide which newspapers would be digitized this year.
I know it's our hope that in the future, those other papers will be able to be digitized too.
By the end of the year, a total of 10 historic papers should be digitized and posted online. They can be viewed, searched, and downloaded for free on the Library of Congress's Chronicling America website. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Education scholarships and grants for ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, are available. To learn where the possibilities this education can take you, visit beanengineeralaska.com. This community message on Alaska Public Media comes from ExxonMobil. Energy lives here.
Glacier Bay National Park is home to some of the oldest ecology records in the world. But until recently, nobody knew where to find the metal nails that marked the research plots left by scientists over 100 years ago. An ecologist in Juneau went to locate the plots in an effort to reveal clues about how glaciers retreat. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
When William S. Cooper arrived in Glacier Bay in 1916, he did so in a large, comfortable research vessel. But Brian Buma's transportation around the inlet was a little more modest. Buma led three scientists along the coastline this summer in kayaks.
And right now there's a mother bear and three cubs on the shore. Right where we want to land. So, they're eating strawberries and intertidal goodies. So we're going to wait a second.
Patience would become a reoccurring theme in Buma's quest to find the lost plots. He's an ecology professor at the University of Alaska Southeast. And there are two characters who have influenced his academic pursuits. One is William S. Cooper, the godfather of modern ecology. The other is referenced in Buma's yellow notebook, the one he takes out with him in the field. On the inside, it says,
"To the Canyon of the Crescent Moon."
A nod to Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where Indy searches for the Holy Grail. And in some ways, Buma would embark on his own journey, looking for his version of buried treasure. He would combine the spirit of his two idols and set out to find Cooper's lost plot points in Glacier Bay. The research began over 100 years ago when Cooper traveled from his home in Minnesota to Alaska. Cooper wanted to see how the landscape was adapting to glacial melt, and that meant returning to the same spots over time to see how the vegetation changed. By the 1930s, Cooper had stopped coming to the area.
So we have all this really interesting and really exciting studies that he did, but then a big gap. And so I thought it might be just possible to retrace his steps.
To pinpoint the exact locations in Glacier Bay, Buma flew to the University of Minnesota last year to look through Cooper's journals for clues. He found exhaustive notes, photographs, and sketches about where the plots could be found. But finding Cooper's spots would still prove to be a challenge.
He did a lot of distance in paces, which is not generally a standard unit of measurement. And so, frankly, it on paper, it looks pretty easy. And then when you get out there, it turns out to be very, very, very difficult.
And making matters even more difficult, Buma would have to navigate through a different landscape than in Cooper's day. In the early 1900s, there was lots of exposed rock. Glaciers had recently retreated from the plots, but there was still more ice visible. Today, the surroundings are largely a tangle of shrubs and trees.
It's like trying to push through a jungle gym. Like, they just don't give. And so you're constantly contorting yourself to, you know, slope yourself sideways or get yourself diagonal, and you got a backpack, and you got a metal detector, and you got bear spray.
Hey there! That's Bear Trail here. Suppose they know where they're going.
Buma and his team have spent 2 weeks over the last two summers looking for Cooper's plots. After bushwhacking for hours, sometimes days, they would get an inkling they were in the right location. Maybe it came from Cooper's old black and white photographs, or the compass bearings retooled for today's magnetic north. In any case, that's when they would bring out the metal detector.
The markers are all buried. They weren't buried when he put them in, of course, but they're all buried now.
You're thinking, wow, this is amazing. You know, no one's been here in a really long time. This is the spot that I read about as an undergrad.
And that sounds good.
It took Buma about a week in 2016 to locate all eight of Cooper's plots in Glacier Bay. After cataloging the species of plants in the area, his team did something not possible back in Cooper's lifetime. They took a nitrogen sample from the soil, with the hopes that scientists can better understand how vegetation grows in a place that used to be covered in ice.
Well, all that information will make us better modelers of climate change in the future.
Buma says observations like Cooper's are rare. Most climate change research didn't start until decades later. So this kind of record can help tell us where the future is headed as more of the world's glaciers retreat. It's unclear if Cooper knew that warming would become a threat over 100 years ago. But Buma says he did know that people could have an impact on the environment. Cooper even lobbied Congress to protect Glacier Bay as a national park.
And it makes him prescient in a sense. I mean, even in his very first paper saying the value of this study, and this is almost word for word, if not word for word, the value of this study will only increase with time. So I'm leaving directions so that it can continue after I'm gone.
And Buma says Cooper was right. The value has increased. And he plans to return to Glacier Bay to help maintain this research for the rest of his life. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
The Southeast landscape isn't just inspiring scientists. KTOO's Matt Miller reports on the melding of science and art at the Juneau Icefield.
For many first-time visitors, the Juneau Ice Field can be a surreal and sublime experience.
Oh, I'm completely in love with it. I cried when we hiked off the glacier the last day.
That's Hannah Perrine Mode, who's originally from Boston and has never been to Alaska before this summer. Mode served as the first ever artist in residence for the Juneau Ice Field Research Program, or JIRP. That's a summer research and training program focusing on the ice and snow, ecology, and weather and climate of the Juneau Ice Field above downtown Juneau. During the 8 weeks that she was on the ice field, Mode painted in watercolors and made cyanotype photographs. Using her medium format camera, she made long 12-hour exposures on paper painted with light-sensitive chemicals that are used for creating blueprints. She would fix or set the images using meltwater from the glaciers.
The blue ice to me is like incredibly magical and beautiful, and it's also a little bit melancholic and thinking about loss in that way.
Over 30 undergraduate and graduate students from as far away as Germany and Singapore participated in JIRP this season. Ann Hill is from Minneapolis and is a senior studying geosciences at Skidmore College. She was part of the team that used precise GPS equipment to measure changes in a glacier's flow and elevation down to an inch or less.
A lot of the glaciers are dropping in elevation, so they're losing a lot of mass, and ultimately the surface is a lot lower than it used to be. And you can see this even just by walking out on the glaciers, because a lot more of the rock is exposed than it used to be.
Taku Glacier was unique among other glaciers on the Juneau Ice Field because it was not losing mass or retreating. The Taku had been advancing over the last few decades, but Hill says their latest measurements indicate it may now be in a stagnant phase.
That leads us to think that potentially in the future, it could start to retreat. So hopefully with our measurements, we'll be able to determine where in the Taku cycle it currently is.
The Taku is the ice field's largest glacier and features a tidewater terminus. Tristan Walker Andrews, a senior at Juneau Douglas High School, was part of the ecology team. It's fairly rare for an Alaskan to sign up for the program, much less for a Juneau student.
Any Juneau students from the university or even either of the high schools who are interested in getting out into nature and exploring basically what is our backyard, I really encourage them to apply to the program and try to get involved in other ways. And it was a really great program.
Although he's not sure yet which field, Walker Andrews says he's interested in pursuing a science career, likely something connected to nature or the natural world. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Matt Miller, Jacob Resnick, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, and Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue-ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.